Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:48 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is July 7th. Thought we'd kick off with oil because it was up nearly $4 today, and that was on the back of Russia shutting down a pipeline coming out of Kazakhstan. So they've basically shut down any route for Kazakhstan to export about 1 million barrels a day. So they aren't done with causing mischief yet in the global oil market. But as I was pointing out yesterday, it's very difficult for Russia to shut down their own supply. But that, of course, doesn't mean that they can't try and interfere with other countries' supply. So oil prices are bouncing from the $100 level. And it's at least as big an upward dynamic today as the downward dynamic we had yesterday. And it's at least some evidence in the region of support in the region of the big psychological $100 level. Now, when we look at oil prices in dollar terms, and I'll put up the continuation chart, well, then we can see here that prices are hovering around $100, and historically, the peak in US dollar terms was higher than that, and it was all the way back in 2008. So we've certainly had a very profound move over the course of the last year, but prices haven't exceeded the old peak in dollar terms. Now, of course, that's all down to the fact that the dollar has been among the strongest currencies in the world. Whereas when you convert oil into euro, pound, Australian dollars, then you're, and Japanese yen for that matter, you're presented with a different picture, where this consolidation is occurring above the peaks put in 2008 and in 2012. So it's profoundly more difficult for other countries to endure these high prices. And the longer these high prices persist for, then the greater the pressure that comes to bear on these other countries. So it's a clear indication that economic pain is being experienced just about everywhere that has a weak currency. Now, the pound was a little steadier in here today, but the dollar index continues to push on the upside because the euro is so weak. And we're at highs that haven't been seen in 20 years for the dollar index. So this is a really significant breakout from a well-defined and lengthy range. So we have to go all the way back to 2002 to see a dollar at this point of strength. It's also, I think, worth considering that the dollar had been among the strongest currencies in the world during the bull market phase of the tech bubble. So investors were getting both the benefit of a strong currency and the strongest stock market in the world. And that siphoned money out of the global economy and pushed it into US stocks. And the dollar didn't peak until well into 2001. And it wasn't really until after 9/11 and the big money printing event that occurred in response to that that the dollar started to come back down. Well, at present, the 10-year yield is back around 3%. And you have two voting members of the Federal Reserve's Open Market Committee talking about raising rates by 75 basis points at the end of this month and potentially another 50 basis points in September. And then perhaps waiting and seeing. So that's continuing to put upward pressure on Treasury yields. And we're up another 7 basis points in here today. So this continues to look like a consolidation. It hasn't made a new reaction low yet. It's bounced and held just above the low put in back in May. It's also unwinding the oversold condition relative to the 200-day moving average. So I've been willing to To think perhaps that this might be a failed upside break, because we've had the failed move above 3.25, but it hasn't broken down yet. So until we see a clear breakdown, then we would have to give the benefit of the doubt to some consolidation. And that there is obviously a much bigger macro component to all of this, that the USA is attempting to, or we're in a period of competitive currency appreciation. When we look at the euro versus the ruble, then we're presented with a rather interesting development. It's much more obvious when we look at euros per ruble rather than rubles per euro. This is an awfully big downward dynamic. If we look at it the other way around, it's not nearly as visible, but the move is there nonetheless. That we've had a significant weakening of the ruble. This was a really profound period of strength from the lows immediately after the invasion, and then we had this significant pop. Where the euro strengthened against the ruble. Now, against a background where the euro is among the weakest currencies in the world, the fact that the ruble was weakening against it suggests that there was a meaningful depreciation event. So, what was the immediate response then of Russia? Well, the first thing they did was obviously had to respond to the weakness in the oil price. So that's quite likely why the currency depreciated, because they've been using revenues from selling oil to support the value of the currency. And this is a clear indication that the currency is exceptionally sensitive to the trend in oil prices. And then we had the really significant pullback in gold. For 2 consecutive days, it came down more than $50. It's barely steady in here today. There's the possibility, at least, that Russia had to sell some of its gold in order to supplement the store of value in the currency because oil prices had pulled back so much. Now, that is likely then to increase the correlation between gold and oil prices. So there's certainly a lot of risk in some of these commodity prices. When we think about how committed the USA is going to be to its policies of raising rates and combating inflation, well, then they have to pay attention to what their mandates are. So, jobless claims are currently around 235,000. And they have mandates to promote growth and then to also try and achieve full employment. Now, if we just look at the trend in unemployment in the period before the pandemic, it had been trending downwards for a lengthy period of time, and there was a clear trend. And then it started to go sideways. And the upper side of that base formation was around 250,000. So we're really not all that far away from it. There is the possibility that the US economy is going to start to contract in this quarter. Or at least that we'll have 2 consecutive quarters of contraction. Now, it also would break a lot of the correlations that we have and the lead indicators that we have. For example, there's never been a recession without the manufacturing or the PMI manufacturing index being below 50. It's currently falling and it's at 53. It's going to be next to be updated on August 1st. And it's not at all beyond the bounds of possibility that it will fall through 50. And that would be another confirmation. Then we have the yield curve spread, and that's back above negative territory in here today because of the move we've had in the 10-year yield. But then also, we've had quite a significant round trip in 2-year yields. So that's also back above the 3% level. What this is clearly suggesting is investors are willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the Federal Reserve that they will raise rates, but that it's going to be short term in nature. So stock markets are rebounding. And the Nasdaq was up another couple of hundred points in here today. So stringing together 3 days in a row on the upside and confirming the short term higher reaction low. If it can push up again tomorrow, excuse me, then that's going to be a higher high. And we did have a higher high in May, but we didn't have the higher reaction low. So it's certainly a softening up process for the downtrend overall, but I think that there's still we're still quite a way from the easing up of monetary conditions, and inflation is going to have to come back down before the Federal Reserve can really moderate monetary policy. And the market really hasn't drawn a conclusion yet about what they're going to do about the size of the balance sheet. Now, they're supposed to be reducing it by 40 billion a month and ramping that up to 90 billion a month in September. If they stop raising rates after September, will they then follow through and accelerate the pace with which they're reducing the size of the balance sheet? Because it's supposed to amp up to 90 billion in September. But all of that is helping to support the currency. Now, on top of all of these factors, you have China, where the number of COVID cases doubled overnight in Shanghai. The most recent and therefore virulent variant of the Omicron virus or Omicron variant has been found in Xi'an and now also found in Beijing. So China is almost uniquely wedded to its COVID zero policy. The rest of the world has migrated to living with it. And the response to the very real possibility that the economy contracted in the last quarter. Now, whether official statistics are going to reflect that or not is certainly open to debate, but there's a broad conclusion that the Chinese economy is in under severe duress. But the stock market is rebounding because the government today announced that they're going to pull forward the quota for borrowing from next year into this year, and that would represent an additional 220 billion. So the credit impulse is still trending higher, and that's beneficial for Chinese shares generally. So the CSI 300 has been churning out a very consistent short-term sequence of higher reaction lows for the last 3 months, and it's now in the region of both the 1,000-day and the 200-day moving averages. Now, it's, I think, rather interesting here. If we look at the trend overall, we've had exceptionally spiky activity, but we still have the sequence of higher major reaction lows. And the China Fund has the same thing. And it has a long history of paying special dividends. And we had an exceptionally large upside weekly key reversal in March. The low was retested in May, and now the fund is in the process, potentially, of breaking its downtrend. And we have some of the most beaten down companies within the tech sector also now pushing back above their respective 200-day moving averages and pushing up to new 3 month and 6 month highs. So there's the potential, at least, that we're going to see greater interest in Chinese shares, because that's where we have a really clear indication that there will be additional support coming through on the monetary side. So the Chinese renminbi was a little steadier in here today. So they're still defending the currency. They don't want to have a really significant depreciation happening overnight, but it is also holding the move below the 1,000-day moving average. And it's virtually impossible, without spending an awful lot of your own money, to support the currency and print more cash to support the economy at the same time. Then the Indian market has been reasonably steady, but it's being largely insulated by the breakdown in the currency. So this is a really significant additional depreciation of the Indian rupee, and there's no real sign yet that it is over. There have been plenty of occasions over the last 20 years when the rupee has stabilized for a year or two, or maybe even three at a time, and those have generally coincided with some of the most rewarding times for international investors. But then international investors see their returns cut out from under them by the depreciation of the currency. And we've seen plenty of examples of that with the JP Morgan India Trust, where it has gone through some exceptional bouts of volatility, and a lot of it has to do with the currency. But it is now steadying from the region of the 1,000-day moving average, so that is looking a little bit more encouraging. When we think then about what we can anticipate in Europe, well, the natural gas price in Europe is surging higher, and it's a really significant headwind to economic growth. But the stock market is oversold in the short term, so we're starting to get a little bit of appetite for buying the dip, and there's certainly the potential to unwind the short-term oversold condition. But there's a lot of work to do to really suggest that this period of underperformance is over. There's no sign that the war has ended or that Russia's capacity for mischief making has been curtailed. That would suggest that we should anticipate that there will be negative surprises, and not least because economies are slowing down. We're going to have some difficult economic news forthcoming, and that's likely to be reflected in earnings. So I closed part of my short position in the Nasdaq last or earlier this week, or last week, I can't remember now, but my rationale was that we were due a rebound, but I'm going to use that rebound as an opportunity to short it again, because I just don't think that we're out of the woods just yet. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.